No hoa nā ki a kuai kana hele hele. I ala iai ke ki ohu ohu I kaua kōkō. O nā ki no malu kalani malo e hoi. E ho ulu mai ana o laka I kona mau kāhu. O mā kou no, o mā kou no, o mā kou no ai. Ai. Aloha kakahi a kakako o au o ke haolani ke kua, ke kumuhula o halau palai hivo ka ipuai. You are listening to Kauai Community Radio and a very special live broadcast on location from Kukui Grove. We are here in the gallery of the Kauai Society of Artists and amongst beautiful artwork of all kinds at the third annual Wings and Woodlands, a tribute to Hawaii's native birds and forests. It's an exhibition of all different types of art, from photography to paintings and clothing. And this is the third year that the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project has been hosting and presenting this particular exhibition. But we're here broadcasting live. We've got a rock star panel of great people from Kauai that do amazing work out in the field, and I'll introduce them in a little bit. But first and foremost, we want to thank all of our listeners and supporters for tuning in and for giving us a special listening ear this morning, because we're going to be talking story about some really important things, issues, points of focus, and all coming from the heart, people that are dedicated to conserving and perpetuating the life forms and the species of different endemic and native birds, from Mauka to Makai, from the uplands to the sea. And then we're going to talk about all of the different species from within these different realms. But particularly, we're going to start off, as I did, just start off with a mele pule, or a prayer chant that comes from the traditions of Halau Palai Hivo Ka'ipuai. And it's also a prayer chant that is known far and wide by many traditional Hawaiian hula practitioners. And it is it's a kanai nai. It is a prayer that petitions the deity of the forest, who is known as Laka, for guidance and inspiration of growth and the abundance of health and well-being in the forest. And so we're going to start there. But this year, we're super excited because there's another partner organization that has come on board to help present this amazing exhibition that's here at the KSA Gallery at Kukui Grove, and that is the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project. So this year, we get to talk about birds all the way from Mauka, from the uplands of the Vauakua, all the way down to the Kai. And a special guest with me today, I'll just introduce their names and we'll reintroduce ourselves as we go around and talk story. But we have Michael DeModa. Mike is recently retired from the National Tropical Botanical Garden. He was the living curator of living collections for NTBG for many years, and continues in that work in his own practices, and continues to do consulting work and from the forest and different projects that he has. But Mike is also a affluent Native Hawaiian speaker. Grew up in the traditions of hula and oli, and we'll hear more from him in a moment. We also have Dr. Julia Digman, who is a planner for the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery, who's really been my point of contact and the mover and the shaker behind putting this whole amazing exhibition together. And super excited to have Graham Taliber, who is a conservation photographer, naturalist, does beautiful, magnificent work in documenting by his wonderful skills and talents as a photographer, all of these different species that we would otherwise never ever meet or know or see. So I'm really excited to talk with Graham this morning as well. And then last but not least, we have Hazel Cashman. Hazel is a field and communications assistant with the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project. And so we've got an all-around team of wonderful people that are very dedicated to conservation work here on Kauai and always collaborating with other organizations near and far. So thanks for tuning in. We're going to, just to set the tone, we're going to play a song from a playlist. This particular mele was composed some years ago. I would say way more than a decade. I'm not really sure, but it's called Ke Ho'olono Nei. And it was a project that, and I didn't do my homework, so I'm just going off the top of my head. My dear friend, who is a Hawaiian music recording artist, who I met many years ago in Hana, Maui. He now lives in Santa Barbara, California. But my dear Hoa, my friend, Leokane Pryor, worked on this project, brought the music, and arranged the song, and they recorded it. And it was a huge project that was put out in partnership with the Department of Land and Natural Resources. They took this music into all of the different schools to teach about and raise the awareness about the dire situation of our native forest birds. And I think for me, growing up, I've always known about them. I've always learned chants and dances about them. But it wasn't until I heard this particular song that it not only piqued my interest, but it really touched my emotion center and shifted me to pay more attention to the health, the well-being, the conditions of what's going on in our forests, and why are we losing all of our native Hawaiian birds. And so this is a song that we're going to play, and then we're going to jump right in to the conversation. So nui ka mahalo ia oko ki ia kakahi aka nui. Thank you so much for tuning in to Aina Ike on the air on this amazing and beautiful morning. Thank you so much for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, guys, we're back. This is a really interesting experience. I feel like we're in church, guys, today. So this is a very first time for me broadcasting live on location. It's fun. Talk about discipline. Well, we have to be quiet. And kala mai au. If you're one of my friends, maybe you can hold off on your text till later, because it'll go ding and I don't know how to turn it off. But anyway, I am here talking story with some great friends, and they've been so disciplined and quiet because our mics have all been queued up, and so we want to make sure that everything is running smoothly. Now, just to recap a little bit, so I want to tell you about that song that we just listened to. So it was composed by Suzanne Case, who collaborated with Leokane Pryor, who put the music together. And you know, I pulled up the words to the mele because when this was composed, oh gosh, when was this? I think this was back in, I'm looking for a date. And of course, when I need a date, it isn't there, but it was sometime back, more than a decade, well, more than a decade. All of the different verses takes us to different islands. So the first verse started off, Ikauka Eloelo a'o Alaka'i, which is our Alaka'i, as in the wilderness preserve in the uplands of the Alaka'i swamp at the summit of Waialeale. And in that first verse, it talks about the lone o'o anxiously searching, calling out in vain for a mate into the sad mists of Kuakahi. And then the next verse actually takes us to the island of Maui, where it describes the po'uli of Hanavi and the different places, including the Olapa forests, where it made its home at in the valleys known as Kaluanui, Kaluaiki, and Kalapavili, ridges where po'uli no longer fly. And then we continue to different destinations, and different birds are mentioned in this particular mele, including the eel, which we know we still see and enjoy if we are only on Hawaii Island. But I want to jump down to the last verse, which says, Eo mai e nakini alehu, which translates as, so answer all of you, the people who are listening that are in our presence, seen and unseen. Elohe ia, no ipaka paka ua, and listen to the message sent in the raindrops. Okahana ia, e malama ia mauloaku, because this is our work to protect evermore. E yamako ke ho'olono name. Yep, here we are, and we are listening, and we are still listening. And from what I gather from those of you guys that are out in the field, the forests are becoming less and less melodic. It's becoming more quiet, and silence is really tearing at our heartstrings because our birds are disappearing. So I'm going to bring to the forefront here our friend Mike DeModa, recently retired from National Tropical Botanical Garden as the curator for Living Connections. And Mike still does plant work. He's a specialist and an expert specifically on Native Hawaiian plants. And aloha kakahiaka ya oe.
Aloha kakahiaka ya oe.
Yeah, pehea oe.
Maika ino, mahalo.
Mahalo. So, talk to us about the forest, Mike. You and I have had this conversation so many times, but we want to start this conversation off with the forest because without it, there would be no place for these plants to exist and prosper. And even more frighteningly, we would lose so many of our endemic and native species of birds and plants and creatures. That's a place close to your heart. So, kia hako manao.
Excuse me. Yes, I have been fortunate enough to be in the forest a lot during my time at NTBG and even before. As a hula practitioner, you go into the forest, and you know, my kumu Keola Lake made special efforts to teach us proper protocol and collecting for ferns and all of that. But over the years, it has occurred to me that our ancestors' understanding of forest ecosystem function and the forest and how important all that was is kind of mind-boggling to me, that their depth of understanding was incredible. And yeah, I guess when you realize that they travel from one island group to another over thousands of years, that they would not be successful if they did not understand the importance of the forests on the islands that they landed on. I can only imagine when they arrived here in Hawaii that they were probably totally amazed at the uniqueness of the things that they saw here, all the flightless birds and the forest systems from the coastline to the highest summits. And they understood that they really needed to preserve that ecosystem function if they were going to survive for the long term. You can't just take it all out and harvest and commodify everything and expect to stay there for a long term. So, I walk through the forest even now thinking how amazing that they were able to divide. They divided up the forest into different zones, with the Wawakua being what we now know as the watershed, because they understood that the importance of, and function of that part of the mountain, right down to the coastlines. And I realized that they understood that so much so that everything in the forest, plants, snails, birds, are all part of the Kiniakua. And, the multitude of gods that inhabited our forest realms. And you would have to show respect to the Kiniakua if you wanted to continue functioning on your island. And so that's the level of respect and care that that our ancestors gave to the forest systems in their time. And that's changed a lot in the last couple of hundred years with, coming of big agriculture and again, the commodification of our lands and our resources. So, none of us living here today are responsible necessarily for the disappearance of all of our native birds and plants and all that. But I do what I do because I understand that. And so I feel it's my responsibility to try and stop that and try and turn it around and do whatever I can to restore ecosystems so that at least there's some place for the birds and the snails and the moths and all that to find food and shelter.
Sure. So there are a couple of words that you mentioned, both Makaulalo Hawaii. The first, of course, is Wawakua. So Wau is a realm. And so like you just mentioned a moment ago, our kupuna kahiko, our ancestors, were so brilliant and sensitive and connected to their natural world that they understood clearly. I think that's the thing that's different for many of us living in this day and time, whether it's on Kauai or elsewhere around the world, is that life is convenient. And people are suffering right now, and I totally get that. But if we go back and we look at our ancestors as an example, they clearly understood that their survival was based on the survival and the abundance of the natural world. So the forested areas of Waunahele was one of those places that they accessed for things that they needed. There was a protocol, as you mentioned, on how they entered, how they gathered, what they did while they were there, and how they expressed gratitude upon departing that realm or that location. And then Wawakua is a very powerful word to me. Wawa, of course, is a realm. And then Akua means deity or deities, plural, or God, if people are more familiar or comfortable with that term, but the divine. And so these are places that things thrive, they live, they exist, they thrive without the help of us. I mean, we don't need to drag a water hose up there and water the forest, because those are things that the gods do. And then things have changed over time, and our relationships have severed or become very different. And I do feel that we all have, unknowingly, we do have kuleana responsibility, whether we're directly in the forest or not, to helping and just raising awareness, which is what we're doing today. So your work continues. We've talked a lot about the different types of plants, but why are the different plants and vegetation in the forest, why is it important to the rest of that ecosystem that depends on healthy forests? And why should we be concerned about the health and well-being of our native Hawaiian forests?
I used the example a couple of years ago with rapid ohia death, that if we lost all of our ohia on all of our islands, we wouldn't be living here in another 50 to 100 years because the ability for our mountains to hold and retain that moisture and release it slowly into the aquifers and the springs and streams would be gone.
Right.
And, you know, the ohia, I mean, there are species of trees that are dominant in their forest types, but even under the ohia forest, there's a biodiversity that's really amazing. You have to stand there and stop and breathe the air and look at what's growing, look what's on the ground, the leaf litter, move that leaf litter around and see the creatures that are under it.
Absolutely.
So that biodiversity is what promotes the resilience of our forests. And, you know, I think we're far enough removed at this point is that no one knows what it was like to have native forests right down to the shoreline. And I think those of us who live here and those of us who have been here ancestrally, that memory is kind of gone because the Waukarnaka and the Waunahele were just above where we're sitting right
exactly.
now. It was that close to us in those days. So their relationship was right with it. I mean, in Hanalei, you know, we see all the tower patches, but that Waunahele was right there on those ridges with the Kauai'a and the, all the diversity. I can't even start to describe what the diversity was probably like. Right above the tower patches of Hanalei. And so they were intimately connected to the native forest types in their environment at one time. And so we're so disconnected now after a couple of hundred years that everybody thinks like, oh, and I get this all the time. We talk about Maile.
Right.
Oh, well, Maile only grows in Kokei. No, that's not right.
Yeah.
Maile, I can show you where Maile is around Lihue.
Yeah, and you live in Hanapipe, which is very dry and arid oftentimes. And I've seen, you've brought me like bunches of like, balls waddled up of vines of Maile when you've had to trim them back.
Right, growing in my yard, yeah. So we are limited by our experiences. You know, I'm fortunate enough to have been to a lot of these areas. And, you know, you listen to the chants, the Oli, and you hear them describing this stuff. They weren't just describing places that were far out of reach up in the mountains. They were describing places that were, you know, you don't write a song about, you know, the birds sipping nectar from a flower just because that flower is way up in Kokei. That flower is just down the road.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's always been my goal to, you know, try and help people understand that their connection with that time in our past can be today as well. And, you know, I imagine that without the restrictions of mosquitoes and other things, I can just see our honey creepers feeding on lehua flowers right up in here on Mount Kahili. I mean, we have, you know, decent native forest that comes down pretty far.
Sure.
And boy, I look forward to that day when that's possible.
Yeah. Well, I remember we had this discussion, and maybe even earlier, but I'm recalling the both of us having a very serious discussion in 2016 about we need to talk about what are we going to do when, and not if, but when rapid ohia death comes to our shores here on Kauai. And so you and I were talking about that in 2016. And then we started to collaborate and, you know, do these talks. And you brought a bunch of, you filled up your truck with ohia lehua plants, and people that came went home with one or two pots of ohia and really started to lay the groundwork on that discussion. And till today, people still assume or they've forgotten that rot is a thing. It continues to exist on Kauai. We've got great people out there doing the work to learn about it, how to curb it, how to quash it. But nonetheless, it is still in it's still in our lives and in our environment here in Kauai. And for me personally, when that day came that we got the news that I think it was April of 2018 that rapid ohia death was discovered, like right in my own ahupua on the opposite side of Kalalea Mountain in Anahola. And I was devastated. We were all devastated. But till today, I still have a personal kapu, for myself and my haumana and the halau. So we have not gathered, picked a pua or a single flower or liko to make leis. Or like this time of the year, I'd be making gorgeous wreaths. But, you know, when things like this happen, there are kapu or restrictions that are put on ourselves and the community so that we can support these different plants and species to regenerate, to heal. So in our native forest, the Ohialehua, of course, is a keystone species. And like you said, without it, you know, we would perish. People don't really understand that. Without the Ohialehua forest, our islands would dry up. We would not have water to drink, and we would eventually all perish. It's a really, really serious discussion to have.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why NTPG and I really teamed up to produce all those trees to give away to promote the resilience of it, and then to promote the idea that we can restore ecosystems. You know, every native tree and shrub you plant in your backyard creates sort of a corridor of native plants. That we all think of the birds because they're very charismatic, but there's a lot of insects that would benefit from native ecosystems. The other thing that's really motivated me in this direction is in my lifetime, I've seen too many native birds go extinct.
Yeah,
I remember when that story of the Kauai o'o was being broadcast on the news. It was so sad. You could hear his lonely cries. It was, you know.
Yeah.
But the po'uli, I mean, there's too many birds that I've experienced extinction with that I just am kind of fed up with it, and I don't want to sit around expecting somebody else to do that job. I think we need to all take responsibility to try and do what we can to stop this wave of extinction. I think of the birds and snails and insects that are in our native forest as our kupuna, our forest kupuna, because their ancestors were here before even our Hawaiian ancestors arrived.
Absolutely.
So they're our elder siblings, sort of in kupuna to us all, and we need to show the aloha for them as much as we can,
and whatever
means we can do, you know, within our powers.
Yeah. So, and that's also a very deep value that many of us still hold, and it's not something that's restricted just to Hawaiian people, but in the Hawaiian culture, we learned from a very young age that these are our relations. Yeah, the nature and the species and from all the different animals and the birds and even the plants are our ohana. It's familial. And so I'll just mention this because that's a whole different show. But when we look at the kumulipo, we just experienced that recently, which is mind-blowing. But that catalogs our relationship with the natural world. Mm-hmm. And us, the kanaka, does not come into the picture until many va later.
Much later. That's right.
So that's a reminder of where we stand in the greater world and the universe.
Shows us our humility. We need to be humble about it because they make a point in the kumulipo to say man is not here yet.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we need reminders.
Ha-ha-ha.
Which means humility and to be humble. Hey, we're going to take a short little break for a public service announcement, which actually sets us up for, I'm going to mention her, we're going to talk to her in a little bit as well, about our seabirds.
Seabird fallout season is September 15th through December 15th. The a'o use the moon and stars to navigate. Attracted to bright lights, the a'o circles the lights and crash land. Once grounded, they face deadly risks from dogs, cats, vehicles, and starvation. You can help by shielding your outside lights, look out for grounded birds, and keep cats indoors and dogs on leashes. We've already lost 94% of the a'o in Kauai. Let's work together to keep them safe.
Thank you so much for that public service announcement. It is seabird fallout season, and we're going to talk about the a'o in a little bit as well. We are actually in a time of great shift. It is the season of makahiki right now, so lonoi ka makahiki to all of us and all of you who are listening. So we had a chat earlier this morning that it's cold at night, yay. And so the weather has shifted. The climatic conditions are shifting. We are getting more rain. This is all the things that happen during Lono's time, during makahiki, which is important to our native Hawaiian forests and our aquifers. So it might be a little bit inconvenient, a little bit muddy, but that's okay. Remember, water is life. Yeah, water is life. We are going to play a real quick song. We want to talk about the, we were talking about the Ohi Alehua. And so we've got queued up the song Kawailehua Ala Kahonua, which was written by Frank Kawai Kapu Kalani Hewitt. When this song came out, it was so popular and so many people recorded it. But it reminds us of the importance of the Ohi Alehua and the life cycles that it enables to continue because of its role to draw in the moisture from the atmosphere to bring us rain so that plants and animals and birds and creatures can thrive. We are back. Hey, we are broadcasting live on location at the Kauai Society of Artists Gallery at Kukui Grove. This entire week, the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project and the Kauai Seabird Endangered Seabird Recovery Project organizations are co-hosting this amazing exhibition of all kinds of different art forms, from magnificent photography to painting and different crafted, handcrafted items. And so the exhibition continues through Friday. Thursday actually is the closing date of the exhibition. And it's one of the ways in which people can learn about all of the different species, from the birds to the insects and the work of these amazing organizations. We're going to talk right now with Dr. Julia Digman. She is the planner of the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery.
Thank you for being here. This is so exhibit.
I know.
It's, yeah, this is hard to sit still.
I know. you folks are doing. Appreciate it. And thank you, Julia, to putting this together. And you have an amazing group of volunteers and people very yes. close to mm-hmm. the work that you folks do. And so what are the hours of the gallery?
So today we are here from noon to 6. Tomorrow as well, noon to 6 p.m., and then Thursday, the same hour, noon to 6. And then Friday is kind of like the art pickup. So everybody who bought some art or artists who have not sold their art, they will come and pick up the art at 3 p.m. But we will be open for a short 3 hours, 12 to 3 p.m. on Friday, for anyone who hasn't had the chance yet to come down and look at the exhibit. So we will be here all those days. And if you want to find those hours and look them up, they're on our website, kawaiiforestbirds.org. You can go there and you'll find all the information on exhibit hours and everything.
Yeah, it's a fantastic website with a lot of information. And this is the third annual. Did you know that we were going to be doing this three times?
No.
And I'm saying, I'm really, really emphasizing annual, because I'd love to see this continue long into the future.
Yeah, so let's put out the call for submissions for next year. Yeah?
Yes, I thought I'd have something this year. I will have something next year.
That's okay.
You see, if I say this on air, then I'm obligated to it, which That's means right. I better start tomorrow.
You know, I'm always super surprised. You know, I put out the call for submissions a year in advance usually,
yes.
and then I'm sitting there like, will anybody submit anything? I don't know. And then we have 140 submissions
Beautiful.
This year. We have something all the way from Italy. Somebody who loves the birds so much, they send us something from Italy. And then,
yes.
of course, we have local entries from Oahu, from Kauai. We have folks from the mainland that send us stuff. I mean, it's really, it's fantastic.
It's amazing. Fantastic. And so I'm just kind of glancing around the gallery, because everything's like right before my eyes. In the corner back there is a beautiful gown that has feathers on it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that came about because the Hawaiian studies teacher, his name is Ke Koa Tango, he teaches Hawaiian studies at Kauai High School, did a May Day this year, and he did a replica of a gown that was worn by Queen Emalani, I believe. And so he agreed to bring this gown here and show it, to just show how feathers were used to make these beautiful gowns and dresses. And then also for next year, he's planning to dedicate the entire May Day to Hawaiian birds.
Lovely.
Which I think is fantastic. So we will talk about more about that later on as well. And it's really amazing to see all these things that are happening.
Yeah, so in addition to the photography and the paintings and the drawings, there's feather work. And so right here, right across of me and over there against the window, are these beautiful kahili pa'alima, which are handheld standards made of feathers. And these were symbols for royalty or ali'i. So whenever the ali'i was present, whether they were in procession, if they were holding court, there were always attendants in the presence of the ali'i to hold these kahili as a symbol of their rank and their sacred royal status. You folks just did one. I think Kumuka'eo, I was talking to her on opening night. Did she do her kahili workshop?
Yes. So her kahili workshop was on Saturday. And
wonderful.
People learned how to make one of these beautiful kahili pa'alima, which are absolutely yeah. amazing. And I'm also very thankful to her, because she brings all her beautiful, I mean, it's museum quality.
Yeah, the displays are amazing.
Displays, and she has them here for the entire week. And she also has been here every day, you know, helping.
Nice.
And it's really, yeah, it's awesome to see, you know, how this kind of like brings all of us together, and not only the people working in conservation, going up to the forest, but also cultural practitioners.
Yes.
Who have a lot of knowledge about, you know, how, what these birds meant in Hawaiian culture. And I really enjoy learning about this during this exhibit.
So, you know, a lot of people, local and visitors, some of them become alarmed with all of the beautiful feather work, because they're like, you folks killed all those birds. And you know, I really need to emphasize and share with everyone that we have not collected feathers from the wild for generations. I think when I was a young keiki, I mean, you know, aside of the pheasants that people hunted that are plentiful, forest feathers from forest birds have not been gathered from the wild for generations. So majority of the things that we see are replicas that are made using a lot of the traditional methods and techniques. But the feathers are usually bought commercially. They're dyed, you know, and imported from different places, actually.
And it's usually chicken and goose feathers.
Right, right, now. Right, right. So, but there is a concern that these birds have been dying off for years now. And I believe perhaps that is one of the primary reasons that the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project got started was really to look after ways in which, or facilitate ways in which, to slow down with the bigger goal of saving and protecting our native Hawaiian forest birds.
Yeah, that's correct. We actually started looking after the puayohi, which is one of the endemic species species to Kauai, and the akikiki just crashed. Akikiki, we now only know of two individuals in the wild, so they are functionally extinct as of this year, and it has been really sad and very depressing to witness this. And I think Mike mentioned that, you know, everybody's kind of fed up with watching these species go extinct.
Sure. Absolutely. So what are the main species? You've mentioned a couple of them that the work and the focus of the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project pays attention to and facilitates your different initiatives around.
I mentioned the three critically endangered ones, which is the puayohi, akikiki, and akikee. But then we have 8 forest bird species left here on Kauai. 6 of them are actually endemic to Kauai, only found here, and then 2 are also found on other islands. And it's actually quite easy to remember because the 2 red species are also found on other islands. So the apapane and the iiwi are 2 that can be also found on other islands. All the other ones are only found here on Kauai.
Yeah.
And you can find them all on our website, kauaiforestbirds.org.
Yes, and they're absolutely
gorgeous.
Beautiful. Yes. They're so beautiful. So those who are tuning in, thank you for listening into Aina Ike on the Air. We're broadcasting live on location from the KSA Gallery at Kukui Grove. And what's happening all week, we celebrated the opening on Friday, this past Friday, of the exhibition, but it's the 3rd annual Wings and Woodlands, a tribute to Hawaii's native birds and forests. And the exhibition is continuing through the week. It closes on Thursday. So it is a wonderful collection of all kinds of work, but it's artwork, but it's a place that people can learn. And you can go on to forestbirds.org to find out more about what they do. When Julia mentions endemic, endemic means that species exists in that certain place and nowhere else in the world. So on the list of birds that they focus their work on, 3 of them are endemic to Kauai, meaning...
Actually, 6 endemic.
6 of them are
3
endemic.
3 of them are critically endangered.
Thank you for that. That's important. So the 3 that are critically endangered, I mean, that to me, that doesn't even feel the sense of urgency that the reality is. Critically endangered means that they're primarily extinct. The akikiki, there's only 2 left in the wild, one of which is pakele, which has my heart and the heart of all of these people. Amazing. And... you know, pakele means to escape. So I don't think that it was a mistake that she was given that name, because it's given her the mana to exist and continue to live in the wild up in the Alakai Wilderness Preserve. The akikiki is endemic to Kauai. That's critically endangered. The akikee, which is also critically endangered here on Kauai, found nowhere else in the world. That bird is yellow. It has 2 things to me that captures my attention as an artist. One is that it has a mask over its eyes. It's kind of really very cool. And then it's And then its beak is different. It crosses over. I think that has a lot to do with how it feeds in the wild.
It uses its beak to pry open the ohia buds.
Yeah.
Kind of like get this open and, you know, be able to get whatever's inside.
Right. So that goes right back to what you were talking about, Mike, earlier, about the importance of these different plant and the trees that are in the forest that provide the nutrition and the food sources for these different birds. The puayohi is the other endemic species that's critically endangered, endemic to Kauai. It's the small Kauai thrush. And then what are the three others, again, for our listeners, so that they can go look it up, go to the forestbirds.org site and look at what they, you know, see what they look like.
So, okay, I mentioned the three critically endangered ones. Then we also have Evian apapane, the
yes.
two red ones. And then we have the Anyanyao, which is a bright yellow little bird that is the smallest honeycreeper still in existence, also a Kauai endemic. We have the Kauai Amakihi, also a honeycreeper, and a species endemic to Kauai. And then we have the Kauai Elepayo,
yes.
which is a flycatcher that's quite easy to see, actually, if you go hiking up in Kokee. It will follow you, kind of like trying to catch all the bugs that are following you when you're hiking. And that's a flycatcher.
Yeah, so all of these species that are endemic to Kauai exist nowhere else in the world. They've adapted to their environment and the ecosystems, which are unique on all the different islands as well. And so I've learned so much just by getting to know you folks and what you folks do. And I'm really, really motivated and inspired. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't spend as much time as I would like in the forest, but I can go again now. So I'm slowly getting back into that swing of things. But it is one of my most favorite places in the whole world to be, to hear and see these birds is truly a gift.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the good thing right now is that's in part why we put on this exhibit for folks who may not be able to go hiking.
Yes.
And, you know, have a four-wheel drive vehicle and can hike through mud and rain. So you can come here and actually look at all the different species through the eyes of the artists. But we also have informational materials where we explain the different species, what they eat, how they behave. So people can just come and get to know these birds and actually have a relationship again with these birds, learn their names, how they look like. We even have some, you guys talked about the Kauai o'o before,
yes.
So we have one painting and it hasn't sold yet. It's an oil painting of a Kauai o'o in
beautiful.
The gallery. And then we have another extinct bird submission, which is a Kauai akialoa.
Do they have the long beak?
Yes, they have this like really, really long beak.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really amazing to see how the different artists, like what their relationship is with these species.
I love art and I love to see these birds and all the different plants and species captured through the talents and the skills of all these different people. The talent is amazing, and it's one of the ways in which people can learn. But as an Uyvi artist myself, and I do different types of art and stuff, but for me, it's a meditation and it's a spiritual practice almost. Not almost. For me, that's what it is. And so the energy that people have put into their artwork is also a representation of intentions and prayers and positive vibrations and salutations, and all these kinds of things all contribute to the wellness and the healing and the health of the environment and all of these different species. And I've been a really huge fan of this guy across me for a very long time. It was so ha ha ha. And I want to bring to the microphone, thanks for being patient. This is Graham Taliber. And Graham is a conservation photographer and a naturalist. And before I knew who Graham was, I saw your amazing works of photography. And if not for that, I would not have met or even known about a lot of these species. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm happy to be here with you.
Awesome.
And yeah, that's definitely like totally the goal of my photography, is to try and bring some light to these species that don't get seen very much, especially with a lot of the Alakai Plateau being so inaccessible to a lot of people. So yeah.
Awesome. And for those who are interested, your Instagram, share your Instagram handle.
My Instagram is Oreomystis. It is the genus of the now functionally extinct Akikiki. So that is spelled Oreomystis. And I like to post pictures of, one, native forest birds, as well as native forest invertebrates. So, yeah, you can see both birds and bugs there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how long have you been out there in the wilderness doing this? When did you find that this was a passion for you?
I actually started my experience in the mountains at NTBG back a number of years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, and I worked with Mike for a period of time. And honestly, having lunches with Mike and getting to talk about the forest and different places, place names, and just getting to go these places that not a whole lot of people have the desire to go to or ability to go to. Yeah, that's really where it began for me. And it started with plants, and then it kind of moved from plants to birds and just trying to like photograph things before they were gone for good.
Yeah. So when you're up there in the Vawakua, I can only imagine what a thrill it is to see something flittering by, and it's like, oh my gosh, that might be, you know, an akikiki. Or, and so through the years, I assume that it's years that you've been traveling up there, going up there and then photographing and pretty much cataloging the eventual demise of the akikiki and other birds. What is your experience like when you're up there? I mean, it's definitely not comfortable. It's wet and soggy and freezing.
Yeah, a lot of the time it is certainly less than ideal, but you know, every once in a while you do get lucky with nice days up there. This was a particularly nice summer, especially the birds were decently active this summer, when in the past summers they've been exceptionally quiet. So that was kind of a nice uplifting thing, you know, given the extinction of the Akikiki and the declining numbers of Akeke. Yeah, so it's a lot of time it's cold, it's rainy. We hang out on what we call the poly, the cliffs, a lot of the time, and that can be especially windy, and so we get the wind chill and everything. But really, in the more positive, you know, it's kind of awesome to see it like that, and to see the weather and ecology that makes it such a special place, you know, the climate that the plants had to evolve to deal with there and whatnot.
Yep.
So... yeah, that's really cool. And seeing the forest, like, my highlight of spending time up there is seeing relationships between the different forest species and Akikiki and the different caterpillars and invertebrates that they feed on, as well as, you know, different moths, different snails.
And just observing their behaviors and their tactics.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk, sir, a little bit more. We're going to... mahalo those that enable us to do what we do at Kauai Community Radio Station. And for those of you who are just tuning in, or if you've been hanging out with us since 9 o'clock this morning, mahalo nui. This is Kumu Ke Haolani Ke Kua, and you're listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, 90.9 FM in Hanalei, 91.9 FM island-wide, 88.1 FM in Anahola and Molawa'a, and 88.9 FM on Oahu Island. You can always stream live at www.kkcr.org. That was the first hour. It just went by so quickly, and we have so much more that I want to talk about. But I'm now talking story with Graham Taliber, who is a naturalist and a conservation photographer with some amazing pieces of art. I have right over here, Nick, thank you for bringing this. I saw this last year and was so amazed by it. So one of the photographs that I've been fascinated by since I just saw it last year, I never knew that it existed. And so what captured me was, and it's a picture of a moth, a beautiful picture of a moth. And it's endemic, not only to Kauai, but it exists on Maui and Molokai as well, according to my research. But it is gorgeous. I'm not really a bug person, but I think I've fallen in love with bugs. And it looks like it has like a superhero's cape that is a beautiful bluish green, looks almost iridescent, and with some very precise markings on it. How big is this moth?
I'd say it's about an inch to an inch and a half. Don't quote me on that exactly, yeah. But yeah, it's definitely one of Hawaii's larger. And so in Hawaii, we have an incredible amount of moth diversity. We only have two native butterflies, but we have, hundreds, over 1,000 native moths. This is one of the larger ones, and its scientific name is Amakua Omaomao, which is, kind of cool to have a scientific name that also is, a Hawaiian name. So its host plant is Cyania, which is one of the Hawaiian lobeliads, and which is one of the plants that the Hawaiian honey creepers evolved alongside. So it has these big, long tubular flowers. And back when the birds were more plentiful on Kauai, they could be easily seen going to these plants and, pollinating them. But anyhow, so it just went another cool forest relationship there. Yeah. And one thing that makes this moth even more special.
It's amazing. So, Mike, the Hawaiian word for that plant, did you say Cyania?
Cyania,
sorry. I can pronounce Hawaiian words, but obviously I'm fumbling that one. What kind of, what is a Inoa Hawaii of that plant? Is it a haha?
Haha, yeah. Most of them are known by that. Some of them have specific names to them, but haha is a kind of a generic for all the cyanias.
Yeah. So what's really important, circling back to the birds, is that the honey creepers are its primary pollinators. And so other species, they all live in this reciprocal world where they're all contributing to each other's health and well-being. So that particular host plant for the Aumakua Omaomao are the honey creepers. And so that plant is important to the birds and then the moths and so on. Looking at the photograph caught my attention last year when I saw it on display on that wall over there. And then when I saw the name of it, I was just blown away. So again, the scientific name of it is Aumakua Omaomao, which are actually two Hawaiian words. And Aumakua is a family spirit or a guardian or a deity, not as high up on the hierarchy ladder as an akua, but nonetheless one of the kini akua or the myriad of forest deities that are revered by the Hawaiian people for many, many generations. When I'm looking at this insect, I can just tell it's special. And then Omaomao has to do with the color green. So when I saw the name of this moth, I was so thrilled. I was like in a candy store. I was so thrilled because Wahine Omao, or Omao is short for green, Omaomao, which is reduplicated, is one of the companions of the goddess Hiiaka Kapoliopele. And her primary role is to assist Hiiaka in healing the forest and healing the land and with a very, very special connection to plants. And so, when I saw it, I saw the name, it immediately catapulted me to elevate the status of this beautiful moth. So thank you for introducing me. You didn't know it. You introduced me to this beautiful species. And And then when I was trying to look up and prepare for today's talk, I found that it doesn't really have a status. Is it because it's just like people don't see it?
We were all, me and a couple of the other biologists at Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project, we're all so thrilled to come across these moths because we see the damage from them frequently on their host plant, Cyania, but we never see the adult moths. So it's really a treat to see the adult moth. And as wonderfully beautiful as the top is with the blue-green iridescent color, what's hard to photograph and what not a lot of people realize is the underside is bright orange, reddish-orange. And even when we talk with some of the older, much more experienced entomologists in Hawaii, a lot of people have yet to see this moth in their time spent in the field. So I feel very lucky to have gotten to see it a number of times.
Yeah, let alone for, photograph it.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's like really, really exciting and, I was like, when something happens on Kauai, I just feel like so proud. Like, like I'm the mama of things like this, which I have absolutely no control or connection with. But it just makes me really, really proud. Several months or earlier this year, I read that that you and others that you hang out with out in the forest had seen these different kahuli. So kahuli is a general Hawaiian name for forest and land snails. They have a very, very long tradition in being recognized as singing snails. And we're not really sure exactly what our kupuna meant by that. But back in the day of our ancestors, they were so plentiful. And I know there's very different contrasting types of native and endemic forest snails or land snails. But at one time, they were so plentiful that early biologists that visited our forests remarked about how they look like ornaments on the trees because of their beautiful colors. And now many have gone extinct, and are not in existence anymore. And then, of course, which reminds us why the forests are so important. The forest is the home for many of these rare species, and I'm just really blown away by the fact that these snails exist at very high elevations. I have no idea, why that is, but they are drawn to special places like this. And earlier this year, and I want you to share your experience and stories with our listener, that there were two different endemic kahuli to Kauai forest snails that were discovered. Where in the information that you read, it says rediscovered. So. But in talking to Julia, you folks had seen those out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you're totally right. Two snails. So when we're doing forest bird work out there, a lot of the time, I have another equally nature geeky friend. He's my best friend. He lives on Big Island now, but his name is Brendan Wong. And we would go out at nighttime, after doing a day's, work of forest bird conservation work. We go and we wander around with our headlamps in search of cool little invertebrates that cling to the native vegetation at night. And we would find snails pretty regularly. And then after a year and a half or 2 years of doing this, you start to see, the regular, you start to see, I've seen that before. Oh, I've seen this before. And then every once in a while you see something that you've never seen before. Mm. And, so that is what happened one night. He was out there by himself and, he texted me the next morning about finding something, a new snail. And I remember just being really envious, wishing that I was there with him at the time. But then sure enough, a few months later, I was out there and I found another snail at 2 in
the
morning.
That was different from the first one.
Sure enough, yeah. So the snail that Brendan found was called Hyona exequata. And yes, you're absolutely right. The terminology for this would be like rediscovered because it existed in the past and was presumed extinct at this point. And then the second snail is called Godwinia caparata. And yeah, I believe that entire genus was presumed extinct. So it's big news in the snail conservation world to get those both into captivity so they can breed those snails and then, you know, hopefully release more of them back into the wild to bulk up their population. But also, I just want to circle back again. Earlier, I think Pouli was mentioned, the Maui endemic bird that went extinct a number of years ago. And just something that not a lot of people think about is just like the really complex relationships between these birds and the forests they live in and the invertebrates that they share the forest with. Pouli was an obligate snail feeder. So it was a forest bird that went around and foraged for native endemic Hawaiian snails. And unfortunately, Hawaiian snails are experiencing the greatest number of extinctions out of any group of animals on the planet right now. So when we lose snails, we can also lose the birds that feed on them and, you know, the plants that are associated with the birds that the birds are pollinating. It's really like a domino effect situation here. And I just want to, again, bring that to light. And with discussing the snails, it's not, you know, everything is related here.
So. Absolutely. So when I read that, And it was a big deal, listeners. I mean, it's all over, and you can go on the internet and go research and check it out. There's so much excitement out in the world of science and people in conservation work because these two endemic species of snails had been rediscovered. They hadn't seen them. No one had seen them. Has seen them in nearly a century. That's almost 100 years. So, you know, for the both of you out there geeking in the forest at night looking for all of and coming across these, this gives me hope that and hopefully it's in our lifetime. And I always put down Pule for that, that the same will happen with our birds. We just have to hold on to that hope and always send out good vibes and intentions that they will get healthy. Our forests will get healthy and be healed. But in this day and age, it cannot do it by itself because humans have done so much to bring negative impact on the environment that we do have this tremendous kuleana to help, you know, help with the healing, you know, of the forest and of the land from Mauka to Makai. And we're going to be talking about the Makai seabirds in just a bit. But, is there anything that you want to say in particular about, just to our listeners, about anything that...
I just want to, earlier I kind of wanted to jump in and agree with Mike when he was talking about the, you know, how hard it is to wrap your head around that these forests used to extend, you know, all the way down to sea level. And with that, I think it's even hard for people within bird conservation in Hawaii to realize that, you know, until the 1920s, there was forest birds down to sea level. I mean, there's accounts of Kauai O'o and Iiwi down at Kalalau Beach and in the northwest Hawaiian valleys, Kauai valleys, up until the 1920s. So it's just like crazy to wrap your head around that, you know, this, they weren't just mountain birds. They were all of Hawaii birds. They should have been in our backyard. So yeah. Anyhow, that's what I...
Thank you. And on that note, I have a song that's lined up, but I think we have, what time is it? Oh, it's about 10:17. We usually do our Manu Minute. Are we doing that, Rodwin? I want to thank Rodwin Pabello. He's our underwriter director for the Kauai Community Radio station. And thanks to him, we are able to do this live broadcast here on location at Kukui Grove in the Kauai Society of Artists Gallery. And so mahalo nui to our friends of Kauai's Wildlife Refuges for bringing us the Manu Minute. Mahalo nui to the friends of Kauai's Wildlife Refuges for bringing us the Manu Minute. Here we're talking story with a wonderful rock star panel of conservation people, plant and bird people, and everyone who has gathered with me to talk story about about their work and about their passions of protecting the environment with specific focuses on native plants of Hawaii and the forest with Mike DeModa. We also have Julia Digman with the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project. We're just talking story with Graham Taliber, who's a biologist and a conservation photographer. And then next up, and you've been so patient, Hazel, I want to say aloha and welcome to Aina Ike on the air. This is Hazel Cashman. And Hazel is a field and communications assistant with the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project. And her work involves monitoring the breeding success of Kauai's native seabirds far up in the mountains and on the offshore islets of Lehua and Moku'ai'ai, as well as restoring the birds' native habitat and engaging with people across the island to raise awareness about seabird conservation. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm learning so much. It's so great to be
Isn't
here.
Isn't it? It's fun. We want to do this more often. Say yes. Yeah, we are having fun, and I'm so grateful to all of you for being here this morning. So I was so excited when Julia told me that the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project was on board as a partner and collaborating to host this beautiful exhibit.
We are so happy too. This has been amazing for us.
It really, really is. And thank you for the work that you folks do. You know, I'm fairly new. Like, a lot of these things that we're talking about, I've been familiar with through the practices of traditional hula growing up. But the finite information and learning about these different birds and species and the modern day issues that we're faced with and what you folks are faced with in your work is fairly new to me. So I love to learn new things. I'm very grateful for all the work that, you know, that all of you do. And so it is also the season of shift. And I just saw that the first moli has returned to Kauai. That's always exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I actually didn't know that. So that's news to me too. Pretty cool. We are very excited. Our team is going out to Lehua next week, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing the moli and ka'upu that hopefully maybe will be out there by now. But it's so amazing to think, like, when you see one of these birds on the ground, that it's just been thousands of miles ranging over the open ocean for the past 5, 6, 7 months, and now here it is right back at the same place that it was born a lot of the time. And I just can't help but think, like, these birds see so much of the ocean and see so many things that humans never get to see, and so they have this, like, special knowledge that at least in some ways we can try and learn from by observing them really carefully and studying their movements and their patterns. Yeah, they're very mystical, I think.
They're very mystical. In general. And, you know, the moli has that, they have that black eyeshadow thing going on, that wing eye.
They're
makeup.
Glam.
They're just so beautiful. When I first met them, and it wasn't that long ago, it literally transformed me on the spot. It was nesting season, so they had just returned around this time of the year, and they were not one bit distracted or panicked that I was, like, in their presence. They were just so focused on each other. I mean, to me, they epitomize love and relationship and commitment and dedication. I think if I was a marriage counselor, I might enlist some of the relationships of the moli to help me with my work. But I don't do that. But I was pretty, pretty fascinated by their commitment and their dedication to their behavior and what they do and why they come back. This time of the year is basically to find their partner. And some of these birds have long-lasting relationships. After the breeding season is over, they fly out to sea, and they don't see each other until they come back. Hopefully nothing happens during the time when they're out over the open seas. But I'm fascinated that when they do leave land after their breeding season is over, they just fly.
Yeah. I was talking with a colleague recently, and
And there are a couple of other songs that I'm familiar with. So just hearing you say that and letting us know that the kaupu exist, and there's a number of breeding pairs that, you know, make their way back to Lihua Island every year is super exciting. Graham's excited about that. We're all excited about that. And so these different seabirds are really, really important in Hawaiian culture. And it blows my mind that there are two species that migrate back to Hawaii during makahiki. One is the moli, of course, and now we're talking about kaupu, them too, mm-hmm. because they have the same behavioral patterns, right? Changing of the guards.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. So one of the species that is just about done pretty much at this point leaving is the a'o.
Yes.
They are one of the species we as a project spend the most time working with. They're really charismatic. A lot of people call them Kauai's seabird because 90% of the entire global population nests only here on this island. There are very small nesting populations on other Hawaiian islands, but we here on Kauai have pretty much the primary responsibility for making sure their nesting habitat is in tip-top shape, allowing them to be successful at breeding. And their timing is a little bit earlier than the other species of seabird we primarily work with, which is the ua'u. They are still in their burrows right now. The little chicks are still somewhat downy, and in the next couple of weeks, they'll be making their first flights out to sea, not to return again for up to 5 years, which, again, like we were talking about with the moli, is just something so amazing to think about.
Yeah. So, you know, when Hazel is talking about these, once these birds fledge as you know, their feathers, their flight feathers start to grow in, and they start practicing, you know, flapping, and they are on the cliffside and kind of testing and dancing around with the wind. When they finally do fledge, they don't return for at least 5, sometimes 6 years. And so as humans, you know, it's hard for us to wrap our head around that because it's like, what do they do? Well, they're just flying.
Yeah, they're out ranging over the open ocean. We have GPS data that shows one flight pattern of an a'o leaving here, flying all the way up to kind of the middle of the Aleutian Island chain in Alaska, and then across almost all the way to the west coast of the mainland, and then all the way back down here. So they
Amazing.
Make these absolutely epic flights.
Yeah.
And they're capable of resting on the water, so they don't need to come to land. They're really an ocean creature more than a land creature.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people don't have that appreciation for birds in general, but these birds have been very controversial on Kauai. So I'm just going to go there for just a moment because I see this as an opportunity for us to learn and just raise awareness that birds in general, in Hawaiian culture, they are elevated to the status of akua or the divine for the simple fact that they can fly. And humans, we can't do that, and getting on an airplane doesn't count. But they are able to traverse the different realms, which means that they are also carriers and deliverers of messages from the spirit world into the living world. And they're not only beautiful, but just their lives and their life cycles and all of the things that have occurred for millennia in what they do, when they leave, when they fly back, how they nest, how they breed. All of these things are fascinating. So the a'o, for people that are not familiar with the a'o, the a'o is the Newell's puffin, or more commonly known as the shearwaters. And it's fallout season right now. So I think from mid-September through December. This is when they are fledging. The youngsters, and so they are distracted by artificial lighting, whether it's tennis courts or hotels or stadium lights, which is why they've been very controversial in the past because of their fledging season, which is known as fallout season. It conflicted with Friday night lights, the football games. And I get that. People are passionate about it. But these birds can't change their behavior patterns. This is how they have been for countless generations and countless centuries. And I like to turn things around a little bit more positive so that us as humans can learn from them and reflect upon the fact that our own ancestors navigated by the moon and the stars. And so if our kupuna can utilize these birds as inspiration and their original kumu or sources of knowledge as teachers, then we that live in the modern day world, whether we're Hawaiian or not, should appreciate that and do what we can to support that. So, you know, if you can turn off your lights at night, be very, very mindful that they can easily get distracted because they are making their way out to the ocean and they're following the light of the moon primarily.
Yeah, we've noticed time and again that the issue of fallout, which is just what we call it when a young bird who's leaving their nest up in the mountains for the first time does get distracted and ends up circling bright lights down here in towns,
yeah,
and then having to land because they're so tired,
yeah,
or they're before exhausted. They get to the ocean,
yeah.
We've noticed that the incidences of that happening really do go up on nights when there's no full moon,
right?
So it's very cool to kind of see that relationship in action, where these young birds have this instinct in them that's, you know, allowing them to navigate out to sea somewhere they've never been. Mind you, like, their nests, when we say nests, we really mean a 6-foot deep hole in the ground. Like, they are in the dark for their entire development until they emerge for that first flight. So they have this instinctual knowledge to navigate from this light source that is the moon. I know it's hard to imagine being a bird, but I bet you can imagine, like, when you emerge out of something completely new and then see all these other lights, how that could be confusing. So I guess just another way that we can try to relate to the wildlife that lives here and think about, you know, the challenges of growing up and finding your way.
Totally.
If we can make it a little easier for them by putting a motion sensor on our light instead of keeping it on all night, that's kind of a very approachable possible solution for a lot of us.
And it's really not that much to adjust ourselves, and we're not asking for a whole lot, just to be aware and conscious that there are other beings that we share space with. And so, unfortunately, humans look at our species as the dominant species, and I don't agree with that. I mean, jump in an open ocean and tell the shark that. Anyway, my small little jab there. So a'o, especially, you know, even for local people, if you live here and you're not familiar with the shearwater or the a'o, it's described to, it's said to be the only seabird that's endemic to Hawaii because they breed only in Hawaii. And they're glossy black above and white beneath, like on the chest, and they are also considered to be endangered. So a couple of things. Another name, and I love hearing you folks use the Hawaiian names for these different species. The a'o is also known as li'o. That's a word, a name that is not as common. Li'o, L-I-Okina'o. And so, you know, behind the golf course area in Wailua, that used to at one time be a huge sand dune ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so the original name for that whole area back there is Ali'o, which has to do with the Li'o. But I also want to, I want to touch upon what you mentioned, that when they leave their, their homes, they're flying from the forest. Yeah, so there's another indication, Mike DeMora, about the importance about the forest, that these birds are birds are born, they hatch, but you know what I mean. That's where the nesting pairs have the egg. I believe they only produce one egg when they do produce an egg.
Yeah, only one per season.
Only one. Just one. You know, there's an olelo no eao about it. Ho'okahi no hua aka'o. The a'o lays but a single egg, which is said of an only child. And so if we know that, we also realize or we learn that they're extremely limited and they don't produce an egg every year. I love the name a'o because of the whole idea of ho'a'o. What does that mean?
To teach.
To teach.
Ho'a'o means to teach, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's...
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Isn't that fascinating? Yeah. A'o is also known as to convey information or to convey knowledge or thus to teach. Ho'a'o is like the actual action of doing it. And so I love that about these birds. People will still say, oh, those birds, they're so dumb. They're just, they fly around in circles and they drop down to the ground and then they get run over, attacked by dogs. They're not the smartest. They're contrary. They're quite brilliant because they navigate by the moon and they have this instinctual ancestral knowledge in them that has enabled them to continue what they do, where they breed, and not having large populations of them in the forest, we've talked about this, has also brought a different negative impacts to our forest ecosystem as well.
Imagine a time when there were millions of seabirds nesting in all the main Hawaiian islands, and the recycling of marine nutrients into our forests was absolutely essential, and I believe that that's part of the reason why our forests are suffering, because they're the nutrient poor now without all the birds that we used to have.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, just the other day, I was up in one of the colonies, and in front of a burrow, I saw a full flying fish skeleton, and it was just a little moment of, like, that is the connection in action right there. Like, unfortunately, it was a meal that the adult had clearly regurgitated, and so the chick didn't get it. But at the same time, it's fertilizing the forest and increasing the capacity of the soil to feed everything else. And it really is cool, like you were talking about, birds as akua kind of moving between realms.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what is so special about seabirds. They really do connect the ocean ecosystem with the forest ecosystem in a way that is just absolutely crucial for the survival of everything. I mean, they are one part in a much larger web, of course, but it's really cool to think about seabirds as kind of like the island engineers that were one of the original pieces allowing plants to thrive here and bringing seeds and then eventually, with enough guano, creating soil and turning this place into what it is today.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And the feathers of the seabirds, because they're much larger, were used to make the larger kahili standards. So these are the ones that people have to like carry on, post, and they're gigantic. Some years ago, okay, this is just coming out of nowhere, so I'm just going to share it. Some years ago, I had a friend that worked at the Bishop Museum, and another one of my hula sisters, who's now a kumu hula as well, called me. And I was back on Kauai, and she said, hey, our friend is going to be leaving her job at the Bishop Museum, so I'm just calling a couple of us, if you're interested. She's going to give us a tour of the back rooms. I'm like,
jealous.
I'm totally there. Let's go. So one of the places that we were able to visit was the room in the back that nobody has access to, where all the kahili are stored. And so what is out front on exhibit is beautiful, but what they have in those vaults back there is just amazing. And so I was able to be in this room that had these ancient kahili, and it also Liloa's feather sash, his ke'e, and got to see it up close. And Liloa is one of our family's ancestors that's in our Mo'oku'au house, was able to like be there and just like chant our family genealogy to connect into that moment. But just to see all of these things, and they're cared for very, very well, but there's just so much. The birds, the forest, everything that all of you have talked about in your work is all interconnected. And you know, and like in hula, I'm just reminded that, so we have a protocol in hula, and it has to do with the hula ka'i and the hula ho'i, which is a formal entry dance, like to enter into the proper, the formal space for the actual offering of the dance, and the hula ho'i, which is the formal departure from that place where we're offering the dance. And in both of them, I'm just reflecting right now, the birds are in there. It's talking about the birds. So in like the hula ka'i, the birds dance with the iwa, dance with hi'iaka. And the birds are mentioned, you know, in all of these different ritual protocols and ceremonies. And so all of these different parts remind us that they're important. And if we don't know anything about them, we should learn. You know, like I was never a bug person, but now I'm like totally inspired by you. Our time is just zooming by. We've got just 10 more minutes left in the live broadcast. So I just want to open up the floor and just have a discussion of whatever it is. Maybe ask each other questions or offer up any mana'o or anything.
I wanted to just very quickly talk about a trip that I was recently on. Yes. With the Nature Conservancy.
Thank you.
The Nature Conservancy sponsored a group of us from different islands, different indigenous conservation practitioners and Kumuhula to go to Tahiti. And we did a cultural exchange with several organizations in Tahiti and on Mo'orea. One of the primary reasons for going was to learn about how they are using mosquitoes to suppress through a program to suppress mosquitoes in the wild, because they do have some rare native birds there as well on the island of Fatuhiva in the Marquesas. It's called the monarch. It's most similar to our ilepayo. It's kind of a flycatcher. And then on the island of Tahiti, they also have that monarch, and it's quite rare. And restoring habitat is part of it, but mosquito suppression is the other part. What motivated them initially, though, several decades ago, was the fact that they had communicable disease, you know, like dengue fever. Yeah. So they were trying to control mosquito-borne diseases for the benefit of people. And now they're doing it for the benefit of wildlife, for birds in particular. And, you know, it's a thing that's going on here in Hawaii as well. But the facility that we got to visit was amazing, because they reared all the mosquitoes themselves in this facility. It's pretty well automated. It employs local, you know, folks around that part of Paia in Tahiti, and they release all these sterile males to mate with the females in the wild, so they don't lay fertile eggs. And for a lot of folks, I'm sure, that are listening are aware that here on Kauai as well as on Maui, the program is releasing about half a million mosquitoes on each island every week. It's one of the ways, it's a strategy to try and save our birds. I personally think that we're shooting below the target. We should be releasing way more of these sterile mosquitoes. But to reiterate that they are non-biting male mosquitoes, so they won't affect us negatively in any way. Mm. But they will help to suppress the population of mosquitoes. And as some of our friends who were on Kauai recently were up in the Alakai, they're catching mosquitoes at the summit now, which in my lifetime was unheard of.
Right.
So, you know, we really want to save our birds. We really need to ramp up our efforts and explore as many options as are available. But the mosquito one that they're doing in Tahiti was really eye-opening. And, you know, we all came back pretty jazz that we
motivated.
Really need to, yeah, motivated that we really need to ramp up those efforts here to stop the tide of extinction among our birds.
Yeah, so, you know, that's definitely something that the government should get behind. I mean, not only the well-being for society itself, but first and foremost, the environment, to me, my opinion, is even more important, because if the environment begins to fade away, then there's no chance that we will survive as well. That, what a trip. That's I mean, what a great journey and a mind-boggling, what a trip.
Yeah, it was really great going with this group that was sponsored by the Nature Conservancy. I got to learn so much from everybody. And you know, they weren't all biologists or conservationists. Many of them were cultural practitioners yeah. that are deeply involved in their own community. So it was really a great, great experience, and I appreciated it.
Awesome.
I just wanted to mention, though, you know, I did a fair amount of work on Lehua. You only need to take a deep breath when you first get there to smell the richness of a seabird colony.
It's a very special smell.
It truly is. And I smell that occasionally high up in the mountains here. And huh. that's when it occurred to me, like, that's what we're missing, bird yeah. droppings for fertilizer.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's inspiring.
Yeah, it really was. Thanks.
Exciting. Julia.
Yeah, I want to jump here just saying that and kind of reiterate what we have said several times, I guess, during the last 2 hours, that it's really, in order to make a difference, what has to happen is we all have to come together. We have to have formed partnerships and kind of work together as a community, not only the conservation projects, but everyone in our community, because the birds and the bugs and everything that we talked about is so different for our forests and so important to keep our ecosystem healthy, that it's kind of like, it's a group effort, right? To make sure that we can continue to see the birds and the bugs and the healthy forest. And I think it's really important to like start forming these relationships, and anyone can really help. I mean, you know, people always ask us what can they do, and we have a lot of opportunities to volunteer. Like, you can, for example, you know, help with this exhibit. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
You don't have to, you know, go up in the mountain and hike and do, you know, all the crazy stuff that, you know, Graham's doing. But, you know, you can come here and just, you know, be a part of this and, you know, learn about it and just, you know, be a communicator of what's happening with these species and with our forests.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Graham, it's such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for everything that you shared and what you do. Any last words for our listeners out there?
I would just encourage everyone to go, if you can, try and spend time outside. If you can't go to the mountains, spend time outside in the lowlands. Here on Kauai, we have some of the best, most intact coastal strand, coastal native habitat left in Hawaii. So go and enjoy Hawaii's nature before it's too late.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Mahalo, Hazel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. This particular show is always available. I'm usually on every Tuesday from 9 to 11. And this has been fun, Rodwin. Thank you so much. Let's do it again wherever we can get a Wi-Fi signal. We can do a live broadcast. So I'm not sure we could do that from Halepaʻakai, but who knows? Who knows? I've thoroughly enjoyed our time this morning, and I want to just sneak in one last song. Kawai Lehua A'ala Kahonua was composed by the Master Kumuhula Frank Kawai Kapua Kalani Hewitt. It is a tribute to our Ohia Lehua forest. And, you know, there's so much for us to learn. And so this exhibition, Wings and Woodlands, a tribute to Hawaii's native birds and forests, is going to continue through Thursday. They're closing down on Thursday. So if you have an opportunity to come, there's so many amazing things in here, from kahili to photography to paintings. And so located right next to Deja Vu, I think it is, or there's a shoe store across that way. Not hard to find. The playground is right outside. But this is a great place for the ohana to come. Learn about the birds. Thank you so much, you guys. Mahalo.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Thank you.
Mahalo nui to all of you who have tuned in this morning for a very special episode of Aina Ike on the Air. This is Kumuhula Ke Haolani Kikua thanking all of you for your support of Kauai Community Radio. Also want to thank again our special guests, Michael DeModa, Julia Digman, Grim Talabar, and Hazel Cashman for joining me for this live broadcast on location from the Wings and Woodlands exhibition at Kukui Grove. Have a maika'i day, everybody. Aloha ki kahi ki kahi. Take care and aloha one another and malama I ke kahi ki kahi. Wishing all of us a beautiful and healthy abundant makahiki, lono ika makahiki, ahui hoaku no mahalo.